Hey, everybody. Fantastic episode of The Morning Show. We're joined by Spencer of Spencer Ventures, one of the most successful NFT fund managers. We discuss ETH NFTs and where they could go from here after their recent bounce back. We talk about the state of affairs on Blast and in the NFT market outside of Ethereum. And we talk about ordinals a little bit too, as well as how Spencer is approaching equity investing. Overall, it's a great episode of the show. Always great to have Spencer on the show. Hope you enjoy it. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Choose Rich podcast, where we choose rich every time. Today is Friday, March 22nd. We have a very special guest panelist, a gentleman that most of you know and love, I'm sure. Maybe some of the new fans have not met him yet since the Choose Rich phenomenon started. A gentleman that runs the most successful NFT fund in the game. And you know there's a lot of them. Spencer of Spencer Ventures. Spencer, how you doing, buddy? You're muted, buddy. A little bit of rust, ring rust.
I'm doing good. Life is good. It's been too long since I've been on the show. You know, I guess I've been choosing poor. I've been choosing to not be here, but we've been grinding it out. We've been choosing rich every day. Life is good. You know, crypto is interesting again. Make crypto interesting again. I believe in that thesis and we're doing it. And, you know, I just can't complain. I'm excited. It sounds like, you know, NFT MIC coming up. We got your guys' event. We got a lot of good things. So, I mean, look, there's a lot in life right now to be grateful for. So,
absolutely, man. You're never choosing poor, Spencer. Well, look, every time, if you've listened to a Spencer show before, you know it's very information dense and we have a lot to cover. So we're just going to get right into it. Just to give you guys a high level summary, we're going to discuss ETH NFTs and where they could go from here after the recent bounce back. We're going to talk about the state of affairs in the Bitcoin ordinals world and whether we could begin to see blast season start to heat up in April. Sig, do you want to lead us through the weather report and then we'll just kind of dive right in?
Yep, absolutely, folks. Let's get into Friday's report. It is Friday, March 22nd. That ETH market volume is 27 million. Solana market volume is at 10. If we look at the market leaders, we've got Farmland by Pixel. That is up to 1.8 ETH. Parallel Avatars there also cooked above 1 ETH now to 1.3. Moonbirds even have moved. They're just sub 1 ETH. Over in Solana, got the OK Bears. They're back over 6. The Badogos, they're back over 6 as well. A meme coin discovery tool, Alpha Gardeners, is up 13% to almost a 40 sol floor. That cooked. On Bitcoin, Little Pups, they're up 40%. Pizza Ninjas, also up 20%. And the Quantum Cats, unfortunately, they're down 11% to 0.32 BTC. Over the past 24 hours, the top four stories. Well, firstly, blockchain AI gaming platform NIM opened their airdrop claim with 90 million NIM up for grabs. Dimension Stakers, of course, they were allocated the larger chunk of the airdrop, while NFT communities such as Pudgies, Prowler Alpha, WolvesDAO, Pirate Nation, and 9DCC also received allocation. Users have until 4th of April to claim their drop, which will be sent to their wallets when the tokens go live at a future date. Secondly, over on Solana, CoinGecko has reported that obviously Solana was the most popular ecosystem so far this year, stating that the blockchain has accounted for almost 50% of crypto investor interest in chain-specific narratives, aka the chain for retail. This comes on the heels of a red-hot meme coin season that saw multiple Solana DEXs actually flip Uniswap in daily volume. Thirdly, over on Base and Avalanche, they're now trying to just lure, they're trying to lure the meme coin volume to their respective chains, with the Avalanche Foundation directly purchasing 5 meme coins, including Kimbo, Gecko, and Tech, and Base creator Jesse Pollack getting in on the action by retweeting meme coin posts from Rian Armstrong, Dogging Me, and Yep, Hi. The two chains ranked number 6 and number 7 by weekly volume, with Avalanche leading at 4.8 billion and Base behind at 1.6. And then lastly, in a move that completely just confused the market and just complicated tokens even further, the BRC20 token Pups announced that they have enabled a bridge through Multibit to allow trading of their Bitcoin native token over on Solana. These tokens will provide allocation to that upcoming rune after the Bitcoin halving, but the market does not like this move at all. It's way too confusing, and the price is down 20% over the last 24 hours to 3.65. That is all for the weather report. It is back to you folks in the studio.
Fantastic weather report as usual, Signal. Some updates from the Daily Bones newsletter. You can subscribe at dailybones.com. First story, Coinbase files with the CFTC to list U.S. regulated futures for Dogecoin, which will start trading on April 1st, pending any objections from the CFTC. Doge is up 90% in the past month to 16 cents. Who could have seen that coming? We'll have to see how the Dogecoin saga plays out this cycle.
I really didn't see that coming. I'm just going to say it now, Pia. I really didn't. That's something like futures on Dogecoin. Can we just get the Ethereum ETF approved, please? It's kind of getting ridiculous now.
Dogecoin is the OG meme coin. Ain't going anywhere. Next story, real world asset tokens, RWA tokens, pump on the back of the news of BlackRock's new crypto fund with Ondo, CFG, Ohm, and PolyX all up 30 to 50% in the last 7 days. That is not Ohm from last cycle. That is OM, ticker OM, ladies and gentlemen. Blast token, ticker SSS, that powers blockchain game Super Sushi Samurai, gets exploited, resulting in a hacker minting new tokens and selling them to the LP, completely draining it and crashing the token price. SSS is in talks with the exploiter to recover funds. Okay, that is a niche Blast story right there, Clemente, but appreciate you putting that in the newsletter. Last story, after their tool sniped multiple pre-sale meme coins on Solana for millions of dollars, peppermints across NFTs have soared 50% over peppermints? What are peppermints?
So this is basically a tool that lets people snipe these pre-sale launches, like what you see here. They'd made like $4 million or something off the Shrooms launch, and there was a sale for it for 400 SOL yesterday.
Spencer, do you know what peppermints is?
And you, I do not.
So my rule is, if Spencer doesn't know what it is, it didn't belong in the newsletter, Clemente. Just you know, giving you a little bit of a hard time, but if Spencer
if it's a soul thing, this is reasonable, because I'm not.
Okay. Fair.
You know, okay. Look, at the end of the day. But look, here's the other arc. Since I've been gone, Clemente has become the best trader on the Nifty. This is the Clemente trader arc, right? So if Clemente knows what it is, maybe I'm out to lunch. That's the thing you got to learn here.
Don't pump up his ego too much. So Spencer, you got a couple of funds that are competing with you now. The one that we like to have fun with and kind of joke around with is the Bodago Super Pack, which is like the literal... It's Clemente and literally 10 other dudes that are all pooling like a tiny bit of Bitcoin together and trading it. Just kidding. Hope that they get it to 100,000. Hope they get it to 1 million. That would be the funnest outcome without question. So shout out to the Bodago Super Pack. Hope they compete. But you have an actual competitor now. You got Joe McCann launching an Ordinals only fund with Dan Held. So finally, there's an actual other horse in the race. Let's just start broad, Spencer, because if people don't know, you're one of the most successful NFT fund managers out there. You crushed it during the bear market. You bought huge bags of Pudgy Penguins. What is the current state of affairs, broadly speaking, about NFTs right now? And then I want to get into like where we're kind of headed.
You know, I think it's a really interesting moment that we've been in, right? Meme coins sucked a ton of attention economy away. I think there's no denying that, no looking at that, no spinning that. We saw Ethereum NFTs bleed, but Ethereum NFTs are in the interesting spot of, relative to the rest of the increased interest in crypto, NFTs have not increased in interest, right? And we see this playing out, Ethereum NFTs, I should say. And I even would make the argument Solana NFTs. We see this playing out in a number of ways, right? I think the clearest example of this to me was when $NICK launched, market cap went to 50 million. Market cap Bodago's, the actual collection created by you guys, right? 10 million, right? Why? Because there's just that much more interest in meme coins at that snapshot in time than there was NFTs. Now, when we look at Ethereum NFTs, right? We have to say, is this a permanent state or is it something that's going to change? I think the very bullish outcome, right, is that Ethereum NFTs have a season like Solana meme coins did. Now, people may say that's really going to be an Ordinals thing. And increasingly, that looks like a strong argument. However, here's the thing that I would look at is, simultaneously, while it feels like relative to the growth in the rest of crypto, the growth in Ethereum NFTs is relatively slow right now, right? That's what it is. The environment for launching coins is the best it's been, right? And we saw this get capitalized on $meme with MemeLand. We see a lot more upcoming. And I don't think it takes too many for people to catch on to who are the big winners of future coins coming, right? The ones we know of, for sure. We've got $anime coming from Azuki. We've got $Mocha coming from Mochaverse. Those are the two big ones. We may see others prepare to launch, right? There's a bunch of gaming things that have launched, I think, on the backs of successes of things like Grapes, other things. Like, we saw this, you know, you have like MB, you have Nexian Gems, you have a bunch of these like gaming NFTs that are pretty explicitly doing tokens, right, that are going to launch. So I think it's very interesting to watch where during the period of time of the meme coin craze was a really good time to be deploying into those things, especially if your thesis is the coin market is hotter than it's been in a very long time, right? Now, obviously, the meta has been shifting in the coin market. We had the pre-sale meta. We had the, I'm not going to talk about it on stream meta yesterday for Solana meme coins, right? We had all sorts of different metas popping up, but like, these are usually not infinite time horizon things. And I think it can be very frustrating, right? You look at a lot of people and they say, I've been building a freaking company for 3 to 5 years through a bear market, maybe two bear markets. And this dev burned the LP and overnight their success. And this is hard for a lot of founders to grapple with. So I've also seen this big, like, what founders were knocked off their thesis, right? What founders saw Solana meme coins running? And that was the straw that broke the camel's back. They said, I've been grinding for years and this is the thing that you guys are going after, right? You see this happen. And so I see a lot of founders, like, this is to me a test of founders' own conviction in the thing they're doing. And it's not a trivial test, because in the bear market, it was easy, right? Everything was going down. Everything was rough, right? You had the share camaraderie. It's a very different thing when just your segment is going down and other things are going up, right? This is a much harder test, I believe, than keeping conviction in the bear market. And I saw it really break a lot of people. But at the end of the day, too, when you're a trader, you have to take a look and you have to say, is this a meta I understand and have edge on, right? I think meme coins are the most platonic form of, like, clearly this is PvP, right? There's only so much liquidity in these things.
Ladies and gentlemen, we got Spencer frozen for a moment, but he will be back. He was absolutely, discussing things that we want to hear about on this show. I think he was going to say that meme coins are PvP because they literally go to zero in a very short time frame. Oh, and we have the richest.
Let me just step into the ring.
Oh, tag team. Nick coming off the top rope, choosing Rich.
Tag man, Spencer.
Nick, can you build on the level of the sophisticated analysis that Spencer was presenting?
I mean,
presenting?
It's worth seeing this transition from racist meme coins over to Bitcoin ordinals. A lot of people are saying that's the direction that it's going. I think that the market takes a hard pivot towards my ETH bags. I own a lot of these ETH bags. I really think that the market is going in that direction. I highly suggest that other people invest alongside the bags, of which are very heavy in my portfolio. So that's sort of my position. And I think that if I articulate that from an intellectual standpoint, that many people are going to be very interested in investing alongside some of these ideas. Signal looks like you wanted to say something.
Yeah, I wanted to say something off the back of what Spencer was saying. He was saying, and in, you know, seeing all these meme coins get so much attention has tested founders, with some of them just saying, I'm out, quit. This is too much. But like tokens, like fungible tokens, on days you sometimes see Bitcoin, Ethereum, all of these down. And then you see AVAX. It just pumps. It pumps when everything else is going down. And I feel like Nick is a bit like AVAX. You know, there is a founder who, when the market is going down and meme coins are just taking attention, what happens? He chooses Rich. And he has thrived and survived and actually mutated into something stronger. So for me, in a PvP environment where founders are just clocking out, you've got Nick going viral, which I have to say, for something which started off as an accident, has literally taken over the internet. So well done, Nick.
He definitely mutated. You got that part right. He's definitely a mutant.
Let me tell you, I'm a philosopher king at this point in time. Only one a week and a half into it. Many venture capitalists are aspiring to replicate the success of my sort of philosophy spreading amongst everybody. I'm a virus, basically, but a virus of integrity and passion and vision and inspiration, you know, and that's really what it's about. Spencer, you we're out for a minute. I appreciate you tagging me back in. Boom.
So Spencer, while you were gone, we were joined by the philosopher king himself. But in all seriousness, Spencer, you cut out exactly where you were talking about founders essentially being broken by the fact that the market was favoring things that are undeniably not forever things, so to speak, right? Like a racist meme coin, I think we can all agree, is not like the future of money. And so the thing that I bring up when I think about this, because obviously as a founder and having gone through the bear market and having been at it for nearly 3 years at this point with this organization, there are moments that can be like a struggle. But I think about Brian Armstrong, the founder of Coinbase, and they've been building that for like nearly a decade, if not exactly a decade at this point. Obviously the best crypto company, the best publicly traded crypto company, I think a lot of people would say. Obviously the Bitcoiner in me wants to say MicroStrategy, blah, blah, blah. But anyway, I'm assuming Brian Armstrong, especially throughout the 2017 ICO boom and everything, had to watch a bunch of bullshit pump extremely hard and just stay on the path and say, no, I'm trying to make something special. I'm doing a different thing. And so it's actually not that hard for me to just, kind of swallow it and keep going every single day and just say, we're building our thing. I'm not worried about random pump and dump bullshit, and we're just doing our thing, you know?
Well, but here's the thing, right? And this is what I think, actually, when I look at who does this right, you guys do this right. Brian Armstrong does this right. Basically, Brian, to
tag me in, Spencer.
What is relative to, like, you look at this meta, how do you harness it, right? Is like, you guys found the Chose Rich Nick meme, right? Like, this became a way that you didn't have to launch a meme coin, but you've harnessed the meme fanatic, like, craziness, right? I think Brian Armstrong, Coinbase, you look at, like, meme coins create a lot of transaction volume, which is good for exchanges, right? Like, exchanges is actually probably the best index play on meme coins. Like, you look at, like, what is a real company that benefited from the meme coin phenomena? I would say, like, Jupiter is an example of a real company that benefited from the meme coin phenomena. And it's hard to find a way. You see a lot of other projects, too. Like, I think because of the Choose Rich Nick meme, like, Bodago's got a lot of meme coin airdrops. And that was a way.
So Spencer, we're getting a little bit of a connection issue. I'm surprised. Usually you're crystal clear. I don't know if you maybe could switch to like an Ethernet cable or something like that. The people want to hear from you. I want to hear from you. When I woke up to Clemente texting me that Spencer was going to join today, very pleasant surprise, because Clemente desperately texted me last night, can you host this morning? No, just kidding, Clemente. But obviously,
He didn't text me. Instead, I woke up to being removed from my calendar. It was on my calendar, and then it got removed. Theo probably texted Clemente, take it off of Nick's calendar.
No.
Take it off of Nick's
calendar. I didn't, but that's something I would do.
Definitively. And I feel like I experienced it yesterday, or this morning, and I sat there and I said, well, what else am I going to do except absolutely go through all of the business things that need to be done at this moment in time?
Literally ask Jack what you could do instead. No, Jack,
there's a document that I'm working on right now. I'm also filling out a form. I'm going to be headlining NFT NYC now. I'm a late morning session. You know,
we have to plan that out, and we're going to make that fun.
Well, I'm being interviewed by the founder of NFT NYC, who's a friend of mine, and I'm like,
no, you're not. No, you're not. Yeah, we'll get on a call with him. We're going to say, this is how it's going to go, amigo.
Am I just going to rap?
Yeah, you're just going to literally rap. You're not going to sit down with just another man. Like, we're going to come out there. You're going to be wearing like an outfit like LL Cool J, and we're going to throw objects into the audience.
Well, that's an interesting idea. We're going to throw objects into the audience. Make sure you're there, because we're throwing, first up, P.O. into the audience. You're going to be able to grab him, just tossing him in there.
I'm going
to
be crowd surfing.
Get your hands all over him.
Crowd surfing over the three people who will be there, P.O. I hope they can carry you.
As soon as you said three, I knew the joke you were making. I spit my coffee out by accident, because that's a really good one signal. I literally have coffee all over myself. Well, because it's true. It's true. But anyway, I'm surprised that the Spencinator was not able to keep his Wi-Fi going. I was really enjoying talking to him. It's only 9:24. Maybe he can sort it out.
He's on old New York City infrastructure.
Yeah,
is the challenge there. You know, New York City is crumbling.
New York City is dead, and the Choose Rich guy killed it.
It's over.
Well, look, Nick, in all seriousness, And by the way, Jack was over here last night and he was just like, yeah, it's been really hard getting Nick to, you know, approve this thing or whatever over the past week. It's fine. It's fine. I was like, is it fine, Jack? Is it? But he's understanding. Everyone knows that the Choose Rich guy is insanely busy. Nick, when you look at the crypto ecosystem right now, in all seriousness, if you had to deploy capital right now, where do you think is the most interesting corner of the market to deploy it? I'd be curious to know what Choose Rich Nick thinks.
This is a good question. Well, stand by because we're in a downtrend right now. So the market has tipped over temporarily, and I like a little bit of consolidation here. Start entering back into Solana and Bitcoin seem like the most interesting things here. Solana was at 220. We're down to 170.
No brainer. $50 gap right there.
And I also think we could see Solana, if we're really being aggressive, it could come all the way back down. I don't know, as low as like 140, 130, something like that.
Sure. Volatile AF.
And so that's over the next like month or so. We have 1 month until PO's favorite day. His favorite holiday, which is the basis of all things in the world, the Bitcoin halving.
It's not the basis of all things in the world. I just understand what it is.
Okay. You understand it so much that it's literally the foundation of your religion, your life, your workout schedule, and everything else is based on that to the cycle of Bitcoin, basically, is how everything works. Uh-huh. So, yeah. You can deny it. Everyone's saying it's 420. We don't know if that's actually the case. But I like Solana. I like Bitcoin. And I also think we've been saying it before. The cycles rotate. I think Spencer was essentially effectively saying that, which is that the crypto market just goes in cycles. And we're in the process of that right now. We're at the tail end. Racism is always a good tail end of a lot of the different cycles. We saw the same thing happen with NFTs. So we saw a lot of racist NFTs. We saw claims of racism. Yesterday we saw Polly, just attacking women. So like this is a good time in the market. Let me tell you, this is when the true colors of people really, really come out, and we're seeing just how garbage. I mean, look, to act like it was the most intelligent group that was jumping into every single part, like hopping from trade to trade till 4 a.m. in the morning. I don't know. I mean, it was interesting. A lot of people made money. I made a little tiny amount, but I did not actively trade the meme side of things. Spencer, how big are your meme bags?
Honestly, not very large, right? Like, well, it depends. A lot of things that I thought were serious businesses, I now consider memes, but I don't think they were intentionally memes.
That's very interesting. So look, the conversation got violently interrupted by bouts of internet issues, and I'm hoping that it doesn't continue, because we love hearing what you have to say, Spencer. But, all right, look, we just saw Pudgy Penguins, for example, which you're a notable, whale colossal holder of, go from 21 Ethereum floor to 10 to a quick bounce back to 15 pretty quick. When I think about, quote, Ethereum NFTs versus NFTs on another chain, I don't actually really care that much what chain they're on, because I don't think it matters, because I'm betting on the organization. I'm not betting on the chain. Like when I buy a Pudgy Penguin, I'm not saying like I'm buying that because I think it's an ETH NFT. I'm saying I'm buying it because I'm betting on the Pudgy Penguins organization. And in a worst case scenario, they could just bridge to another chain. So, I mean, do I think that a rotation to NFTs in general will come back? Yeah, absolutely. I think it would be a weird comment to say, no, never again will NFTs be hot, especially since I was commenting yesterday about just how resilient the NFT asset class actually is when you really think about it. Went through the bear market. Over 75% of the crypto market either doesn't understand NFTs or literally outwardly dislikes them slash says that they're, quote, stupid. And yet there's still these NFT volumes. There's still a $16 million sale on a CryptoPunk this week. There was like a, you know, $14 million sale, however much the last one was, in the past 2 weeks. So I guess, you know, when you think about the direction that we're heading in, I asked this question, NFT stats, Spencer. Let's say 1 year from now, you know, best case scenario, Bitcoin, it's post-halving, Bitcoin's at 140K, right? Monster run. Ethereum ETF got approved. Ethereum's at $7,000, right? Monster run. Solana's at $400. Where do you kind of see the NFT market at that point? Damn it. I thought he was just paying attention to me. He was frozen. I was just looking at a frozen Spencer for literally a minute.
Spencer.
Damn it.
Me back in. I got this, dude. It's all good. I'm ready to go.
I can hop back on Twitter Spaces if that works for you guys.
All right. We'll do audio only. Yeah. I don't like audio only, but we'll do it. Spencer, did you hear my question?
Yeah. I heard your question. It was like, what? So I think like what we saw over the last couple of weeks, right, was a big unwinding of leverage. That's a lot of what happened was, this is a, like, why did Ethereum NFTs bleed so hard relative to others? I don't think it was just like a lack of attention on Ethereum NFTs. It's like, if you look at the stage of growth of an asset class of where Ethereum NFTs are, they've introduced a lot of volatility through Blend, right? Like, there was something like 400 or 500 Pudgy Penguins borrowed against on Blend. And you saw like over 150 of those be unwound at one time, right? And this compounds things violently. And, you know, this isn't the first time we've seen this in an asset class, right? Like, the entire unwinding of the last cycle was an unwinding of leverage from like Three Arrows Capital leverage trading, Alameda Research leverage trading. Like, we've seen leverage trading unwinds. And you know what? We didn't see it in a big way. We didn't see that in the 2017-16 cycle in coins, right? We saw that in the 2021 cycle, right? So to me, like, Ethereum NFTs right now is like, you have to look and you say, okay, there's been a growth and a maturity in this asset class. So part of that growth and maturity was like too much available leverage. And so you see now an interesting thing too, right? You think about those 400, 500 Pudgy Penguins out on leverage in Blend. And you think about like what's been a lot of the value of a Pudgy Penguin recently has been airdrops, right? And so one thing that's been curious for me to watch is like all those Pudgy Penguins that are in the Blend wallet, like when the Blend wallet gets an airdrop, that supply is basically just gone. Right? Neither the lender nor the borrower gets it. If it's an airdrop, not a claim. And so one thing that will be interesting to see is how much unwinding of loans we have coming into like more airdrop season. And you got to think, like, there's a bunch of stuff that's probably coming up that reasonably has a Pudgy allocation. Is it ZK Sync, right? Which they partner with for their game. Is it Layer Zero, who we know that whole team is big Pudgy holders? Is it Barachain? Is it some of these other things coming up? Like, I think we continue to see that effect. And I think it's just like, look at what's going on. You don't see the same. Ordinals does not have lending, right? They don't even have bids yet. So like, they don't have this hugely volatile market structure. Solana NFTs even don't really seem to have the same market structure, right? One of the interesting things that you should look at is the bid-ask spread on Solana NFTs is much wider than Ethereum NFTs today. But this is actually in line with what it used to be on Ethereum NFTs. Like last cycle, Ethereum NFTs also had a huge bid-ask spread, right? And it's been closed by platforms like Blur and some other changes in market structure. So like, yes, it doesn't matter what chain an NFT is on if you're betting on the company, you're betting on the business. But like, call a spade, if you look at the market structures of what the financial instruments in Ethereum NFTs are, right? Like tons of people we saw borrowing against their NFT to go gamble that money on meme coins, right? This is what a lot of people were doing. And this added a lot of leverage to the system.
Yeah. I mean, look, you got to factor in all of those different things. I mean, NFTs are even, I would say, riskier than meme coins in many ways because of the lack of liquidity. It's kind of wild. You can sort of get in and out of meme coins. Obviously, that's not a fact. It's a subject that's open to debate. But, you know, you being a primarily NFT-focused fund, I understand that that's where you have an edge. But like, I don't know, are there times you lose sleep over that and think maybe I should have a bigger fungible token position, Spencer?
I mean, look, like when you see, it's, I'll admit, right? Like it is tough to watch stuff created the night before run like crazy when you have a lot of bags that don't run like crazy, right? Like, obviously, that's something that I think about sometimes. But at the end of the day, right, again, like, this is all very PvP, but like, especially meme coins are PvP. And the question that you have to ask yourself, right, that this helps me sleep at night, is you go and you say, do I really feel like I have an edge in the PvP nature of meme coins? And the answer is no, right? Like, at the end of the day, to move the size that I would need to move for it to move the needle for the fund, like, it's not easy to get in and out. Like, it's essentially, I would have to just bet on exchange listings, right? And so,
because of the level of liquidity in these meme coins?
Yeah, there's such little liquidity, right? Like, and this is the thing that, like it is harder to trade with bigger P&L than it is with smaller P&L, right?
Yeah.
Like, if I was managing thousands of dollars, even like tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of dollars, not like seven figures or eight figures of capital, right? Like, putting $100 into a meme coin is a lot easier than trying to put $100,000 into a meme coin and turn that into $1 million, right?
Yeah.
$100 into $10,000, even $100,000 is a much more realistic and like reasonable thing than trying to put like $100,000 and turn it into $1 million with a meme coin, right? Because it's just so hard to get liquidity for a long enough period of time to exit a position like that, right? And so, like, it's just such a fundamentally different thing, right? Me, you know that I like to talk to teams. I like to diligence teams, right? There's no talking to teams. There's no diligencing teams when it comes to meme coins. So like for me, it's just not my wheelhouse. And as tempting as it often is, it's like, okay, at the end of the day, this is just not my thing, right? And a lot of people in crypto try and become experts in everything, and then you're an expert in nothing, right? And so really find the PvP meta where you feel like you have an edge, or find the meta where you don't think it's so PvP and it's just generally going to go up, and that's a space to play. And I think it's really tough. Like, if I were to get a big meme coin allocation, it probably would just be something like buy a bag of Whiff, right? You know, we've got some Mog, we've got some stuff, but Bonk. It's nothing crazy. Yeah, some Bonk, like something like that that's already kind of exchange listed, or something that feels close to an exchange listing, that's probably most interesting. But these, like, sub couple of mil market cap things, like, it's just a hard cookie to crack, right? And I think you have this huge bias, right? This like exacerbated social media problem where, like, you see, it looks like on the timeline, you're like, oh my God, everyone 10x, everyone 100x their portfolio on Solana meme coins. Like, how did I miss this, right? And the truth is, it's not really that, right? A, people only post the P&L screenshots of their big wins, right? Like, you don't see how they gambled away 20, 30 times, right? And then one time they hit. And then B, like, of everyone posting their unrealized gains P&Ls, how many people actually took profits before it went to zero, right? And the answer is, structurally, it can't be that many people, because if they all took profits, then it would have gone to, like, they can't all take profits, right? Because whoever takes profits first is the only one who doesn't have that bag go to zero.
Yeah, I mean, I think people need to really actually understand that. Understand, like, when you're an institutional investor, like, I follow, Joe McCann, Asymmetric, right? He has when with Bonk, some of those are sort of like the institutional meme coins. So those are the ones that I invest in. And it's not designed to buy them today to sell them tomorrow. It's you accumulate a significant position in them and you wait 6 to 12 months. And that's when you have an opportunity for profit taking. So it's just a different thing than I'm going to gamble into 50 of these and maybe hit on one. But in reality, the likelihood of you actually coming out with more money is actually kind of on the unlikely side. Spencer, I want to ask you about Blast. So when Blast went live in late February, most people were kind of underwhelmed by the launch. Some of the incentives that Pac-Man set up to keep liquidity on the L2 were also, maybe a little bit underwhelming. You're a big time Blast bull. I'm a big time Pac-Man / Blur bull. What do you make of how that played out? What do you make of where we're at now? You have a significant exposure, I want to say. I'd love to know what you're thinking about.
I mean, look, like, I think that The interesting thing that's played out on Blast has been, like, they actually did a really good job of getting a lot of different financial protocols to launch, like, interesting products on Blast. The challenge has been that, like, there isn't a lot of good stuff to trade in those protocols, right? And so I think that's really where the issues have been, is it was so heavily incentivized to have, like, really robust DeFi, to have really robust, like, you have liquidity pools, perps, like, borrowing and lending, right? But, like, you look at the top TVL dApp on Blast, and it's a lending protocol where you just lend and borrow and, like, loop borrowing and lending against itself, because there's nothing to do other than trade, like, the native stablecoin and ETH, Like there's no other coins that are super, super interesting. I think that that's been really challenging for volume because it's hard to capture attention when you have only the infrastructure part and none of the like more fundamentals, right? The other challenge there too is like all of that infrastructure will ultimately have its own token, right? But like in this sort of point earning period, like there is no own token for like tokens to be traded on the exchanges. And so a lot of it has been like kind of feeling like an empty room in terms of projects. In terms of like where I think that's headed, I think it's really easy to say like, oh, like they failed or oh, this, that, the other. But like, I think you really like have to look at like, look at Blast relative to something like Starkware, right? And look at the FDV that Starkware opened at. I still think that Blast is a cook, right? I just think like L2s have a pretty strong narrative. There's getting to be a lot of them. Relative to a lot of the other L2s, like the issues aren't quite as bad as you might think, but it definitely needs to grow and there needs to be one more thing, right? We still haven't seen, and one of the interesting things too is like you look at Blast as like Blur's L2, right? And you say, okay, you know, the biggest Ethereum NFT marketplace launches an L2. There should be a robust NFT ecosystem. And simultaneously, no one builds any NFT infrastructure because they say, hey, why would I compete with Blur on their own L2? And then Blur doesn't launch at launch on its L2, right? And so where I'm looking at least is like, I think a lot of people expected that NFTs would have a really big part on Blast, and it just hasn't. Like there isn't even really a native marketplace, right? And again, no one wants to compete with Blur on their own marketplace. So I think that there's more that we'll see in the later innings of this. Like I would be shocked if Blur doesn't launch a product on Blast. And I'm very, very, very curious what that product is. What you do see, however, is like TVL is still very high. DAP TVL, incredibly high. One thing you should look at here is, and this may have changed over the last couple of days, but like pretty recently, right? There's been like, I think it's something like 4,000 ETH in Wasabi Protocol's Blast like liquidity pool, right? 4,000 ETH. Now that earns less than the Wasabi Protocol mainnet ETH liquidity pool in terms of yield, right? So on mainnet, Wasabi Protocol yield is like 5-6%. I think on Blast, it's like 3-4%.
So right? In other words, less friction to just do it on mainnet. Why would you go the Blast route, right?
No, I'm saying like, look, it is literally a lower yield for the same pool on mainnet, yet it has 1/10 the ETH that the Blast one does, right? Mm. And the answer here is there's so few places to park Blast that I think builders are really the big winners of Blast, right?
Sure.
The TVL of the dApps is kind of crazy, because there's literally like $2-3 billion on Blast with like kind of nowhere to go. And so the builders that were able to capture that TVL, I mean, there's no way, like there's a number of dApps that have passed like $100 million TVL that have passed like these different milestones, where I think if they had launched that same dApp on mainnet or even on another L2, their expectations of TVL would have been like 1/10 to 1/100 what their TVL is on Blast. And so from that perspective, they've done a great job getting TVL to the dApps.
Very interesting. So we'll have to see how Blur and Blast end up playing out. Clemente, do you have a question?
Yes. Spencer, I think most people are under the assumption based on Blur's last tweet back in late February that they would be launching on Blast. I don't know what this would end up playing out as, but I'm curious, like right now, when you look at Blast and when you look at like getting, whether it's farming points or trying to get some sort of Blast exposure, I'm curious how you're playing that out. Is it playing YOLO games? Is it just sitting in stables and just earning the 15% yield on USDB? Is it maybe buying this dip on Blur? Like, I'm curious how you're just trying to navigate this ecosystem on Blast right now under the assumption that like, hey, this is going to pick up in the later innings of this. And this is like the first or second inning.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's like two things you should look at, right? One is going to be like pick some dApps that you think are safe and really do your research, right? Because like, it's kind of the Wild West out there. There's a short period of time for these companies to spin up these products. So I would say like one of the reasons, like you pick what you feel is safe. Like you can earn native yield plus earn Blast points plus earn like one of the dApps native points. Like that's probably cumulatively a very good yield. There's even ways like If you deposit into Juice Finance, you can borrow against your ETH on Juice Finance, deposit into Wasabi and earn Juice, Wasabi, and Blast Points all at the same time. Like, there's a couple of things like that that you can do where, like, you're getting multiple different, like, ownerships at the same time that compound. Now, it's interesting you bring up Blur Token, and I'm going to push back on something you said. You said that there's been a dip in Blur Token. And, like, this is true from, like, the price of Blur Token, right? But really, when you're thinking about, okay, buy Blur Token to stake, right? Like, you're thinking about buying it to stake to earn points. The expected cost of a point has maybe not necessarily changed that much, right? In the fact of, like, the coin Blur Token has gone down in price, yet you will also get fewer total points staking it through the airdrop. And so one thing you have to do the math on is, like, and this is, like, so I've had a big pile of Blur for quite a while. I think in general, I thought that was one of the better exposures, if not the best exposure you could have to Blast. As we get closer and closer to a potential Blast TGE, like, that, just spot buying that coin to stake has less and less value because you're really getting fewer and fewer points for basically what was all wrong. But I think when Blast launched, Blur was like 60 cents, which was up from 15 cents like a few weeks prior. It was 60 cents, right? So it's 60 cents now. But if you bought then versus bought now at the same price, you've missed out on like almost all of the points that you could get from having staked it originally. So I just caution people there to be really careful about like one of the reasons that Blur is still so valuable is because a lot of it is staked. And so obviously when the unlock and the unstake happens, right? So whenever Blast Token is launched, those points become valuable. I think it's tough for me to see a world where Blur, $Blur sustains value then, right? So what you have is like this kind of ticking time bomb of all these people unstaking and selling, and you have to like price the expected value of waiting, of like holding into that ticking time bomb, which is the points you earn. So if the points go down, et cetera, right? But yeah, I think like just Bridge, having TVL there, having it on dApps is probably like, if you were to increase your exposure, that's the way to do it.
Clement, do you have a follow-up or?
The only thing, right. So Spencer, are you operating under the assumption that Blur staking, these points that you're accumulating will then give you a Blast airdrop? Or are you operating under the assumption that it'll be a Blur airdrop? Because it's still redacted, right?
Yeah, I mean, I'm operating under the assumption that this is a Blast airdrop.
Okay.
Well, there you go. Spencer, last thing. So you have been doing some angel investing with your fund, and that was surprising to me because I know that you love liquidity. What made you go in that direction, and what's the story there?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think that like one of the things that is a big transition as a crypto investor is like having access to certain types of rounds. And I think this is like I would say this is a dipping our toes in the water kind of thing, but like we've just played around with different ways to get exposure to things, and some of the rounds that were going on in the private investment market were just really favorably capped, right? And we see too, like, there's a pretty short window. So I know a lot of bigger crypto funds that have raised large funds in the last 3 to 4 months. They haven't necessarily announced them, but like there's this big influx of capital from bigger funds. And what always happens is when bigger funds raise, they look and they say, who are the good players that did these smaller rounds, right? And the ability for those small players to go and raise a pretty quick markup is pretty substantial, right? Also, the ability for a smaller player that does a strategic round, right, to go and raise a round and then get to TGE within the same cycle is pretty substantial. And so if you looked like in the bear market, right, it was really hard to do a TGE. It was really hard to get listed. There wasn't a lot of volumes. It was hard to get TVL. Like a lot of those barriers have come down. And so the opportunity for a company to go from like a $20 million or a $50 million cap to launching a token with a billion-dollar FDV is like a lot more real than it was a few months ago, right? We went from seeing like one company a year do that to like we're seeing like three companies a month do that right now, right? And so the opportunity to have those excise returns, the math just works out a lot better to be doing some of those private investments as well, especially in areas where we aren't as domain expertise, right? Like I'll say this too, one of our venture investments we did recently was Palette, right? And I think that came from looking at the Say NFT market and saying, okay, Say, definitely like an interesting L1. This is, I think, a market that has big potential, but it's not obvious to me that like the NFTs that is on chain today are the NFTs that could win this market. Like someone's probably going to mint something or come out of the gates there, and it's going to be like something like, I just don't know how to evaluate. And it's kind of difficult to spend time evaluating what the Say NFT for exposure is, right? However, like, the Say NFT marketplace is not hard to evaluate. It's pretty obvious that like Pallet is the one, to me at least, right? And so there it was like, okay, if I want to place a bet on Say NFTs, the best index exposure to that is actually just the marketplace, more so than the NFTs for me right now, deploying at the size I deploy at, right?
Well, the marketplace has product market fit. That's a huge thing too, is that we know that there's proven product market fit for an NFT marketplace. When we had Mert on, he talked about this as well. Signal has a question for you, Spencer.
Yeah, was over on the Ordinal side, Spencer. So I know like you're really keen on betting on teams specifically, but considering how hot the Ordinal side is, are you looking at that from a team's perspective? Or are you looking at that from just the flipping JPEGs because you know the ecosystem has momentum?
I think both, right? Like I think I'm still very bullish, like finding good teams. I think with Ordinals right now, like it's not really a team driven, it's not really a utility driven, it's not really like a delivery driven, but it kind of is, right? Like if you look at like where OMB is, like OMB isn't what it is today without ZK Shark being an active member of the community. And so I think one thing that I'm looking at there is like who actually matters, like whose opinion on things matter. And I think one thing that I've seen is like, you know, Ordinals, like everyone's talking about Ruins. Everyone's talking about Ruins. Why is everyone talking about Ruins, right? Because the people who made Ordinal Theory, like these are like sort of the celebrities of that space, are launching a new thing. And of course, that's going to take up a lot of mind share, right? You see people like ZK Shark and those who like launched OMB, like they take up mind share. You see like Nodetoshi, like take up mind share, right? Like who as a persona has mind share? Not who as a persona is delivering product has to be like, has been the mind shift that I've had around Ordinals is like, who can continue to be relevant to the whales that matter? Because like the thesis of Ordinals, to me at least, and I think to a lot of people, is like, if Ordinals is just like a bunch of Ethereum NFT traders coming to Bitcoin and being like, oh, we're so early now because it's spreadsheets, right? And like interesting, but not that interesting. However, if Ordinals awakens like old money crypto, if Ordinals is the thing where like the like silent Bitcoin whales, right? The like people who have a lot of Bitcoin, if that is what finally gets them into NFTs, then this is a huge untapped market. And for like, you know, you say, okay, there's more money in Ethereum, so Ethereum NFTs have more room to run than like a Solana, right? Well, for that same argument, like Bitcoin has more money. Like, there's just more money of Bitcoin in the world. So there's more money that exists to buy your bags, if and only if the people with big Bitcoin bags start also buying Ordinals, right? And so that's, I think, the most hard thing to suss out. It's never going to be a clean answer. I've definitely seen a number of Bitcoin whales get into Ordinals that I think wouldn't have otherwise gotten into NFTs. But by and large, it still feels like this is an NFT-driven thing. And you look, right, like everyone kind of wanted Ethereum NFTs go back to the market structure it used to have, right? And like in the last cycle with, you know, OpenSea that barely worked, right?
Yep.
And like not really, not a tight bid-ask spread. There wasn't a lot of liquidity. People were buying off the floor, right? Well, you have to buy off the floor on Ordinals because there's no bid, right? So like this is kind of, I think a lot of Ethereum traders feel nostalgic because the market structure of Ethereum NFTs has shifted, as we discussed, so much the last year, but the market structure of Ordinals looks actually a lot like the old Ethereum NFT market structure.
Yeah, I mean, no, the thing about NFTs in general, Spencer, is that it's still so early in this. And I know people like get irked like when they're in the space and they hear it's so early. But the reality is like nobody understands this stuff. Even crypto people still aren't in on it. I just think it's going to take so long, like maybe another half decade before there's like large adoption. I think at that point, if you own the NFTs that are looked at as the grails, as like the, I don't know, Michael Jordan rookie card or whatever comparison, the Magic the Gathering most sought after card, I feel like the upside will be absolutely insane, and you're going to want to like hold those. It's obviously incredibly difficult, to predict that and figure out what the right stuff is to buy. Last question before we wrap. What is the time horizon for like the investments that you have right now with your fund? Are you saying we're going to liquidate, you know, when we believe it's the top of this cycle, or are we holding for a half decade? What's the time horizon?
I mean, it depends, right? We'll liquidate when it's the right moment to liquidate. I don't think we're, I mean, this is a contrarian take, but I think like I'm a big believer in the ETF, right? And I think that to me is like, you evaluate things post ETF.
Yeah.
Right? At the very soonest. Until then, it's just kind of like along for the ride. But I do want to touch on something you said, right? Which is like, so there's this whole like, oh, Grail collectibles narrative in NFTs. And I think one of the most interesting things of the last unit of time we don't talk so much about is who's bled the most in NFTs. It's art blocks. Mm-hmm. It is. And like, wow, have Fidenza's, Squiggles, Ringers not performed the way you would think that they would perform, right? You don't see these giant, giant sales. We had that big Autoglyph sale a little while ago, but like CryptoPunks doing much better than Fidenza's is a very interesting phenomenon to watch. And I don't see the art narrative in the same way existing at all in the NFT space. And people could say, okay, Blur killed the NFT space. But if that was the case, you don't trade art blocks on Blur, right? Like if that was truly the case, you should have seen right now art blocks outperforming, and it's been the opposite. And I think that's been one of the really, really interesting like sort of societal phenomena, was I thought we saw a lot of new people come into the space on the digital art thesis, and we don't see it being as strong right now. And I can't even give you a great explanation of why, other than we didn't have a new wave of like interesting art and artists, right? And so things are only so culturally relevant as their context. And I think this is why you see, again, like the benefit that a lot of the PFP projects have is, if it's true that NFTs never get greater liquidity than this, Ethereum NFTs are like kind of dead, you can always launch a token, right? We saw Meanland do this. We see, you know, Pixelmon do this. We see a lot of people just go on the token route, right? That's a reasonable route, and it gives you access to that liquidity. I think the art side of this has a harder time, right, having a call option on another narrative in the space than Ethereum NFTs that are PFPs have right now.
Real quick, Spencer, I'm glad you brought this up. I think this is a very interesting topic of conversation. Here's the reality. Is the artists that publish through art blocks, it's not like they were already, and this is, I'm not trying to offend anybody. I'm not trying to talk smack about the caliber of talent. I think that there's incredibly talented artists that are in art blocks, but it's not like they were putting up $6 million, $8 million, $12 million individual artwork sales at Sotheby's before NFTs, right? And if you want the art narrative to exist, well, guess what? People that buy traditional art and the existing Sotheby's buyers have to actually want the NFTs and buy them. And when we had Fawocious on this show, Fawocious discussed that a collector at Sotheby's bought one of his physical sculptures, because Fawocious does those large physical sculptures that caught the eye of a traditional art collector. And he bought that. And Fawocious said, "How did you hear about me?" And the guy just said, "Oh, just through Sotheby's, I saw the piece and I liked it." And then Fawocious said, "It comes with an NFT." And the person, the collector, was like, I don't know what that is. I don't want that. It's not like they didn't want it. So if you're going to do the fine art narrative, well, guess what? You have to get the fine art buyers, the existing buyers to buy. They're not here. The crypto people don't even like or understand NFTs. So you expect a traditional art market buyer that doesn't have crypto to like NFTs right now? It's going to take so long. I do think it'll happen, but this space is existing on literally 24-hour cycles, 48-hour cycles, one-week cycles. We're talking about like a decade before, maybe even longer, before the traditional art world really comes through. You brought up art blocks. Art blocks is just one pretty much like startup that exists in the NFT space that people decided for a period of time was the blue chip thing. There's a ton of execution risk there. And I think you're just watching the execution risk play out. Like, the market ordained them as the kind of blue chip thing for a period of time. That doesn't mean that long term, over a 10, 20 year time horizon, the market is going to determine that that's the thing. Not to mention the supply on all those collections is insane. It's like 3,000 to 10,000 pieces in each collection, you know, willy nilly before breakfast. Like if somebody in the audience knows exactly how many Art Blocks pieces there are, I'd love to know, because I'm going to bet there's like over 100,000. So that's the thing about this, that I feel like people take things for granted. Like, it's not a given that your random ass art NFT is going to go to $1 million over the next amount of time, especially when nobody knew who the artist was before 2021 NFT season. When in the traditional art world right now, there's living artists putting up huge sales that don't have NFTs. When they, if they decide, if Jeff Koons decides to do an NFT collection, he's going to eat all the existing artists' lunch. So I don't know if that commentary, if you think anything I said there is right, wrong, or in between.
I'm going to push back on that a bit, PO, because I think, like, you know, yesterday we were talking about Udi with his thesis about PFPs being a digital flex over on Ordinals in however many years that it takes. And I said, I don't think that's going to happen, you know, anytime soon. I think art has exactly the same narrative, that it has its like a specific time frame when it will happen. It's not going to happen now, but it will happen. And I think we need to look back and look at what PFPs were doing just 12 to 15 months ago. I was literally talking to people in DMs, and they were like, I'm not touching PFPs. PFPs are garbage, are trash. Like, don't want to put your money there. And where were these people allocating their money? They were allocating their money into art. Art became flight to quality. And you saw it in people like, you know, OSF. They did that big sale. Where does he deploy his money? He's deploying his money into ACK, Videnzas, Punks, like as sort of a store of value. I think what we're seeing now, though, is that these pieces sometimes take so long to accrue value over time that people want that liquidity. So they're selling them, you know, flipping them into potentially, you know, pudgies that we saw, making the money off pudgies. But I do believe that that money will eventually rotate back into those pieces, whether that's squiggles, whether it's autoglyphs, whether it's punks, because they too do have a narrative that I think will play out over the long term. But right now, you don't do flight to quality. We are not in a preserve capital environment. We're in an environment which is make as much money as you can. If I have 50 ETH locked in a Fidenza, I want to put that in something else, make lots of money, and then probably buy back into a Fidenza at a lower price. And that is what I think we're seeing happening now. Art Blocks is struggling now how PFPs were struggling 12 to 15 months ago.
So real quick before I throw to Spencer, but Signal, the only thing is like, art collectors don't dump a Picasso. They're like, yo, let me just dump this $25 million Picasso real quick.
They do when their liquidity is there. The reason why you don't dump a Picasso is because trying to dump a Picasso is extremely difficult. OTC, you need to find the right buyers, you need to go through a middleman. That whole process is so difficult that exactly as you're saying, you don't dump a Picasso, but you can dump an autoglyph very easily on this market. And I think that's where the difference lies.
Spencer, any thoughts? Oh, is it? Yeah, oh, there we go.
Yeah. Dude, calm down, Pio. Settle down. Simmer down. Yeah, I mean, look, like I think it's nothing structural. It's just like there was this argument that I think if you look back on the last cycle and see the euphoria, right? What are the arguments that didn't play out, right? One argument that didn't play out, obviously, virtual land, right? Like that was even kind of felt a little tired last cycle. Another argument that didn't play out, right? Like the DAO narrative hasn't really played out, right? Another narrative that I question is like, I think digital art felt like such an obvious use case, right? And like, in many ways it was, and it was this bastion, but like, I mean, I own a lot of like traditional art, right? And I've never had a need to put a screen on my wall and display digital art. It just never scratched that itch for me. And I've always wondered if I was just weird in that, right? But I think that we're kind of seeing that play out where like there are those who collect digital art and it's a lot of very concentrated things. And we've had seen a couple of big collectors come in. There hasn't been this wave. Like you would expect if in 10 to 15 years, this is going to be this giant thing, you'd expect like growth over time, right? You wouldn't expect like, and so maybe it does, maybe it doesn't, right? But like, I think you have to think about what is the forcing catalyst for something really big and structural to change in the market that brings a lot of liquidity in, right? For Solana meme coins, call a spade a spade. It was Solana meme coins starting to get listed on CEXs was a huge shift in what that market could be, right? As soon as you can have the possibility of a Solana meme coin go to an exchange, totally changes the math on all the expected things, right? We have a lot of Solana meme coins that have ended up on exchanges. Now, I'll give you an example, right? Blast meme coins. None of them are on exchanges, right? I think I'd be shocked if a Blast meme coin got listed on exchange, right? Now let's see in Ethereum NFT market, right? You have, okay, really the big thing that you can do is a coin can get listed on exchange that's associated to NFT. Like that's the big thing that can happen, right? But if you look at the art market, what is the big thing that can happen that will create greater liquidity, right? Even we saw, for example, very shockingly to me at least, like multiple $15 million punk sales that didn't result in movements of the punk floor, right? Like there is no exchange that the art can get listed on that elevates it further, that unlocks further future liquidity. Like there is no further thing to hand it off to, right? And so without that, I think it's kind of challenging to see like what it is. But conversely, not only is it challenging, it's like if someone structurally changes it such that there is this bigger pool of liquidity, like that could be the thing, right? And we saw that happen with PFPs. That's what Blur was a huge structural change in what the NFT market looked like. So I think that we're due for at least one to two more gigantic structural shifts of how liquidity works in the NFT market over the next 12 to 18 months. And I think that will really inform where we're headed.
It'll be interesting to see it play out. I just looked it up and there's over 200,000 art blocks items. That's a lot, especially considering when you look at the time frame that all of those were launched. I'm just saying, like on paper, kind of feels like a lot of different artworks that people expect to be valued at a high price, like 200,000 plus in less than 2 years. I don't know. It's a lot. Anyway, as usual, Spencer, absolutely fantastic presentation today on the show. Had some internet issues. We'll get those resolved. But love having you on the show and really glad that you came on today. We got to get you booked more often.
Great to have you to be here, guys. Sorry about my internet. You know, it's just be like that sometimes. So I appreciate the flexibility. I know, Pio, you don't like the audio-only interviews, but tough life. So, you know, there we go. Sometimes the market favors you. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes the internet gods shine down upon us. Sometimes they don't. But it just be like that, you know?
No worries at all, buddy. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, we do this show Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. Eastern time, each and every week on Twitter Spaces, on YouTube, on X Video, on Apple and Spotify podcasts, really wherever you get your content, we are there. We'll be back next week, Monday morning. This is the Choose Rich podcast where we choose rich every single time. Catch you guys next time. Hope everybody has a great weekend and we'll be back.